are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are and wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here, and I think you will be too. You need to know, if this is your first time at The Kevin Smith Show, that we have a free weekly newsletter. It is called the K-Files e-zine. And you can unsubscribe anytime. It takes 10 seconds or so to subscribe, and you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. I've gotten some emails from folks saying, did you send out the K-Files e-zine this week? I got three of those. Yes, we did. If you did not receive yours, that's because your email address bounced it back to us for some reason, and if it bounced back three times, then you were automatically deleted from the database. That's what the software does. It is frustrating. It is because of some of the internet email service providers practicing what I call illegal, unconstitutional prior restraint. We have never had a spam complaint against us. The reason is because it's a double opt-in newsletter. So they're just restraining it because they want to. Prior restraint. Only you can fix that. Edgar Mitchell. You know Edgar Mitchell, right? He's the sixth man to walk on the moon. In fact, the last man to walk on the moon, I believe. And I got a telephone call this afternoon, two of them, informing me that Edgar Mitchell was on a radio show in the UK and that he was making some rather bold and startling revelations. According to the telephone calls, he was saying on radio in the UK that, in fact, extraterrestrial intelligent beings do exist and that they are visiting Earth and have been for a long time. According to the reports I got, he was saying that our government and possibly other governments, but our government here in the United States has contact with at least one of these extraterrestrial races, and that the Roswell incident was indeed an alien spacecraft that was shot down by a U.S. pilot. And so those are he's come close to making those statements before, but apparently this time he was just right out in the open with it. And so that's big news, and we are attempting now to get in touch with Edgar Mitchell and see if we can get him on the show. I've tried that before, and none of the contact information that I had worked. But I found out someone who knows him and is his friend, and I'm going to ask that person to facilitate contact. Very, very quickly, let me say that, you know, we struggled to keep things going here at the show when gasoline was costing $1.85 a gallon. It got tougher at $2.50. And at 350, it was really, really tough, and we had to make some decisions to cut back, and we had, you know, what went was the 800 telephone number. Well, now we're at $4 a gallon and climbing, and the price of everything else has gone up. If you got a few extra bucks laying around and you think this show is worth it, help us to not have to make further cutbacks. Go to the website and click on the donation, button, and then make a small donation, all right? Whatever amount, we appreciate it.
By the independent artist from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. And we are back. My guest this evening is someone that it just fascinates me. All I have to do is check out some of his books, and I'm just fascinated all over again. William Michael Mott is someone who has been researching, I guess you could say, the lost or hidden history of this planet for quite some time. And he's sort of focused on, in his most recent writings, well, I can't say most recent, but in recent writings, he's kind of focused on getting to what is the truth behind a lot of the mythology and folklore. And it is his position that these mythical beasts and mythical beings that we've all heard about in these stories, in some cases may have actually existed, and in other cases may have existed but were allegorized, in other words, presented in a little bit different format in the stories, but it's that kernel of truth behind it all that he has gone after, and he has moved into some new areas of writing and publishing that open up, I think, some real great opportunities, some truly great opportunities for those of us who wish to expand our minds. William Michael Mott, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, thanks for having me back, Kevin. It's been a while, but I'm glad to be back.
Well, you're certainly welcome. And, you know, what you write, as well as some of the writings of Walter Bosley, our longtime listeners will remember Walter. He's been with us several times. Both of you guys write about some of the really mysterious stuff that a lot of the paranormal folks don't get into. When we talk about paranormal, a lot of times people assume that we're talking about ghost hunting.
Right.
There's more to it than that. Sometimes we talk about paranormal, and or we use the term, and people assume we're talking about UFOs, and I don't even consider them to be paranormal.
Right.
I consider them to be real material craft. But you guys have gotten into a lot of the dark corners of the topic of paranormal. And I just would like to ask why. I'm glad you did, but what made you do it?
Well, you know, it's always been an interest of mine, folklore and mythology and that sort of thing. And as an artist, of course, I was always interested in those topics. But for instance, we have a magazine. Walter has just come out with a magazine, which is on my website. And I have a column in there, and I believe I'll probably be doing a column for each issue. And I touch upon, you know, in my own childhood, when I was a child living in Morocco, some of the stories that I heard at the time, which were just, you know, hair-raising stories for a child my age. But as I've gotten older, along with so many other things, it's just kind of has gone into the pot and it's kind of stewed for decades. And you start to see patterns. You start to see linkages between these things. And you just put the pieces together. One of the things that you brought up about the paranormal, it's such a broad term these days, and I tend to think of it in terms of anomalies. You know, what is an anomalous thing that just can't be explained? And, of course, as we talked about before, I believe, you know, the human mind has a tendency to either dismiss outright things that it finds to be frightening, or it ridicules those things. And by extension, it ridicules the people who report these things. The people who have these experiences, they become objects of ridicule. And after I wrote the first edition of Caverns, Cauldrons, and Concealed Creatures, I had so many people contact me with their stories because they said, this happened to me. You know, this is almost exactly the same thing I experienced. And all that sort of stuff, which, of course, led to a much expanded second edition. But so many people have a fear, and they have a fear when they had the fear when they would contact me that they were going to be ridiculed, you know, that people would, you know, they'd lose their job or whatever. But these types of things have happened to people throughout human history. And in earlier ages, there were other explanations. Now we have various technological explanations and so forth. But I think that what we're looking at here is a hidden aspect of our own biosphere on the planet. You know, so many people want to look elsewhere for answers to these mysteries, like to other planets and so forth. But I think that whatever the core of all of these mysteries, or very nearly all of these mysteries, whatever that core is, I think it's here, and it always has been.
You have written a lot. Well, no, before I ask that question, I can't let this slide. You said you grew up in Morocco?
Well, no, I spent about 2.5 years there when I was in elementary school.
Why was that?
My dad was in the Navy,
And
he was stationed at a U.S. base there called Kenitra. Yeah, so we got to go out to the countryside. We had a Moroccan housekeeper, and she would threaten my brother and myself with various goblins of the local Islamic folklore when we would misbehave. So, you know, I heard all those tales and stuff. And of course, growing up as a Navy brat and moving all over the place, and you know, having my roots in the southeastern United States, I've heard stories all my life.
Did you ever get across the little expanse of water there between Morocco and Spain?
Oh, yes.
Because there's a big Navy base just up the coast from that. When you cross from Morocco into Spain, you go to Malaga,
right,
in Spain.
In fact,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm pretty sure that we did go to Malaga, and when we left Morocco, we went to Spain and stayed for a few.
Well, Malaga is a city in Spain.
Right.
It's right on the coast. And then if you just go right up the coast from there, you get to Rota, where there is a big Navy base.
Right, that's where we went. We went to Rota. That's where we went.
Yeah.
And we actually went to Rota and stayed there, and then until we managed to get back to the U.S. on a transatlantic ocean liner, which was pretty neat for a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it took us about a week or two to come across the ocean on a luxury liner, and that was kind of neat. So,
how long were you in Morocco? 2.5 years?
About 2.5 years.
And how old were you?
I think I came back when I would have started the third grade. But the memories are as vivid. It's amazing. The memories of that time, in some ways, are more vivid than the memories of last week.
Well, that's a sign you're getting older there.
I guess that's what it is.
Yeah, that's it is. All right, now, you heard all these stories in Morocco,
right.
And then I guess you've heard more as you were growing
Absolutely.
Up. What, as you started to look at those stories, what made you say, you know, I think there might be something real in there?
Well, you know, all the time, things are ridiculed until something happens. There's a breakthrough. What you know, I hate to use a cliche, but a paradigm shift. And then people say, hey, look, this actually happens. And a perfect example of that, and I'm sure you've heard this before, is, for instance, the okapi or even the giant panda, the mountain gorilla. All these things were considered to be legendary. People scoffed until they found them. And they were completely, they were like unicorns. People just said, no way. And then somebody would find one, bring one back dead or alive, and then all of a sudden there's a shift in the perception of reality, and then these things exist. And I think a similar thing has recently happened, and that was the find on Flores Island of the so-called hobbits. And I think we discussed that before. But
yeah, we did.
These diminutive humanoids that they found, who apparently were very successful hunters, and the people there told the researchers who showed up that, oh, these things haven't been gone long at all. We can remember a few generations back, they were still here, and we had to kill these things because they were coming into our village, and they were stealing our food, and they were stealing our children. And then, you know, you hear something like that, and you say, that's the same motif that exists, for instance, in Ireland, where diminutive humanoids that live underground in a cave, or in caves, come out at night, and they steal human children, they steal crops, and they steal livestock. And it's a pattern. And it's the kind of pattern, though, that has, at that point, when they start talking about it in those terms, it shifts from, you know, pure fantasy to very real possibility. And
well, now, see, that one, that's pretty easy for most of us to make that mental leap,
right,
and understand. But, I mean, you've written about vampires, you've written about dragons, you've written about just about every kind of mythical creature, and it's your position that there is an element of truth like that behind those stories.
Right, there are patterns that indicate, you know, that things of this nature exist, and that there's a great, like you said, a kernel of truth for all these legends. And for instance, you mentioned dragons. Well, I don't really get into dragons per se. I believe that there are unknown life forms, like for instance in the ocean,
mm-hmm.
that we have yet to verify, and some of these things may resemble, you know, someone's idea of an aquatic dragon. At the same time, you know, I look more into the folklore side of the so-called dragon kings and the dragon princes and princesses of various folklore motifs, and these are beings that whether they're the Nagas of India, which are reptilian humanoids, or the dragon kings of China in Japan, or modern day accounts of reptilian beings that come at night and you know, basically take the genetic material that they want from people. Things of this nature, it's a pattern that repeats itself over and over again. The only thing that's updated is the presentation, or maybe the way we interpret it. You know, today's diminutive, intrusive being in the middle of the night would have been a fairy to someone 200 years ago, or it would have been a Naga to someone in India, 150, 200 years ago. And I think that once we start to realize that maybe we're not alone on this planet, and by that I mean in terms of sentience, in terms of higher intelligence, that we may figure out a way to, if people are being victimized in any way by this one-sided relationship, maybe there's a way to put an end to it.
All right, you mentioned reptilians. Tell us a little bit about that. What have you found out about these reptilians, and do they actually exist?
Well, you know, again, it's as if you're looking at so many different types of beings, but the thing that they have in common is when you look at the literature, just about any type of anomalous being that's not just an animal form, for instance, like the Loch Ness Monster is animal form, okay? That's, if it exists, it's an animal. It's not in any way humanoid.
All right.
But you have other beings, a wide variety of beings, including some that are reptilian in some of their characteristics, or at least they're perceived to be that way by the people who see them, that basically follow an earthly vertebrate template. And I know I've said that over and over again, but I really can't stress that enough. I mean, people who are really big into all the different types of so-called aliens, I think what they're overlooking is just the sheer number of strange humanoids that have been seen and reported, some by very credible witnesses, even military personnel and things of that nature. These beings conform to a template that has everything in common with earthly life. And they have, you know, one head, two arms, two legs, central trunk, binocular vision, things of this nature. And even if at first they seem outrageous or frightening to the person who sees them because they've never seen anything like this before, they really don't exhibit any characteristics that are unearthly. They may look mammalian to some extent. They may have reptilian characteristics. But, you know, they seem to behave more as if they're furtive beings who live here. They're more interested in, they seem to be very interested in genetic diversity, whether it's human genetic diversity or animal, livestock issues, crops, things of this nature. And, you know, as other people have reported, there have been, you know, being seen taking soil samples and things of this nature, then they assume, well, they're coming from somewhere else and they're checking out our planet. No, what if they live here and they're looking to see what kind of damage is being done by things that we may be doing?
Well, I think that is a possibility, a very real possibility. But at the same time, I don't think that it would be necessary for life coming from some other part of the universe to be greatly different from us. I don't think that that's a given either. I think that it's possible that we are what we are because that's a natural thing that happens in this universe.
Right. Well, if it's, you know, if panspermia is true, and, you know, regardless of how you look at that, if you're agnostic, atheist, or creationist, doesn't matter. You know, if you believe that something seeded this planet with life, then it could be that it's common, you know, throughout the universe. However, when you look at this planet, again, this is going back to my book, this planet has such genetic diversity that we have everything from hermit crabs to blue whales to, you know, rhinoceri to human beings and cephalopods. And they all look so different. We all look so different. And we seem to be different. But genetically, we're not different, not that different at all. You know, we share so much in common, most of our genetic code. For instance, you know, they did the recent thing where flies and spiders were found to have a lot of the same genetic code that we have. If they were from somewhere else, I think that there would be more diversity. You understand what I'm saying?
I think. Yeah, well, I do. I don't subscribe to that, but
right.
I certainly understand it.
Well, if we have that much diversity here,
mm-hmm.
you know, within our own biosphere, how much vaster would the genetic diversity be in the universe at large?
Well, I think it could be.
Yeah,
I think it could be.
Sure, and even when you look at what happens on an island, you know, the huge, like look at the Galapagos, the huge amount of diversity that's just native to that island that explodes there. Well, that just, you know, would say to me that if panspermia or anything similar is true, then the universe is going to be full of a huge variety of life. Now, maybe bipedal creatures are the only ones that will end up, you know, developing spaceships and throwing themselves out into space. But at the same time, I believe that any being that throws itself into space, whether it's us or anybody else, is going to be essentially predatory in nature. because, you know, herbivores tend to look at the ground. They're not real technologically savvy. They don't, you know, they just want to look for something to eat. That's all they care about. Whereas the predator looks up, you know, looks across the savanna, looks up at the sky, and eventually moves to the sky if possible. And I think that, you know, even if there are beings from somewhere else, caution would be well advised in dealing with somebody like that.
So you think then that you mentioned the reptilians, and we've talked about the so-called hobbits. Do you think that almost all, if not all, of the strange creatures that people have reported seeing are terrestrial in origin?
I think so, but it depends on how you define terrestrial, and by that I mean there may be categories. For instance, you may have cryptids or unknown creatures which are purely natural, you know, hitherto unknown types of animals, and, you know, some of these have been discovered, like the giant squid and other type varieties of Southeast Asian ungulates and things of that nature, like the deer and things that they've discovered in the jungles. And then you have other parts that, I mean, other types of creatures that might be part of a mostly unseen part of our planet. And whether that's subterranean or suboceanic or both, there seems to be something to this. There's a lot of evidence to indicate that life forms are evolving out of the sight of mankind. And a recent example, they found a new slug, and I know slug doesn't sound like a big deal, but they found a new slug in Wales recently, in the last few weeks. And this slug is very large. It has razor sharp teeth for a slug, you know, and it just gobbles up earthworms like crazy. And it's an albino slug, and they have determined that whatever this thing is, that most likely it came from a cave system. They don't know where it came from. They don't know how it got to Wales. They don't know if it's native to the British Isles or if it was, you know, imported from somewhere else. But when you see these types of things, and there's an indication that there's more to our own ecosystem, there's more to our own biosphere than we really even have the beginnings of an understanding.
All right, we've got a couple of minutes here until our next break. So let me ask you to visit this. If we don't get through it, we'll pick it up on the other side of the break. But what about the inner Earth theory, the hollow Earth theory? I mean, how does that play with your theories about life?
Well, my theory about life is that life, you know, is kind of like the cliche from Jurassic Park, life will find a way. And we find that all the time. You know, there have been people who've written about very serious scholarly scientific tomes about the incredible diversity of bacterial life deep, deep within the Earth. And some of these people have said that possibly 90% of life on Earth is actually completely subsurface bacteria. We just don't know about it. And, you know, who knows? That could be so. But bacteria is the basis, there's one of the bases of a food chain. I believe more along the lines of there may be cavern systems, there may be vast cavern systems, and there seems to be some evidence to support this, and it's in my book. But there may be vast cavern systems that are very conducive to the development or the maintaining of life. At the same time, the hollow earth theory, I'm not a big hollow earth supporter, but I don't know. I'm an agnostic. I believe that there's a lot of evidence about the so-called hollow earth theory that is poo-pooed and scoffed at by mainstream science. But I think that people need to have an open mind, because there's so much about our own planet we don't know. And even if it's not a complete hollow cavity, there could be regions within the crust which are very large. In fact, we know for a fact there's one right between the crust and the mantle. It's called the MOHO, or the Mohorovicic. I hope I said that right.
You did.
Continuity. And it's just a worldwide cavern system, and it's many miles down. And it's right there at that boundary. And it's apparently a region under very high pressure. And you have blowing caves all over the world that just constantly blow a very strong wind. That wind's coming from somewhere.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this, folks. Don't go away. And we are back. My guest this evening is William Michael Mott.
And when we went away, we were talking about these caverns, huge, gigantic cavern system. Where did you say it is?
It's at the boundary of the crust and the mantle, and it's generally a worldwide structure. It was found by seismic readings, and the anomalies that people have interpreted in this thing basically indicate that it's either full of gas, liquid, or a combination of both. And that's just about all we know about it at this point.
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Brooks Agnew. He is a physicist and an engineer.
Right.
He's been on the show, and, you know, he said that whether the Earth is hollow or not is anybody's guess at this point, because we haven't been in there. We don't have photographs of it and so forth.
Right.
But he said that the physics involved in planetary formation would, he said, just from the point of view of physics, would tell us that every spherical object in space is hollow.
Well, you know, I have it in my book, and there's I have a chapter in there on the hollow earth theory. And I think the point that he may be trying to make, and correct me if I'm wrong because I haven't heard him on your show, but centrifugal force would tend to throw heavier material outward in a molten body if that body's spinning.
That's correct.
And as those layers go to the outside, they would harden. And so that way you would build up a harder outside shell, and you would probably be left with something very hot in the middle that was spinning, at least initially. And I think that's a very valid theory. However, it doesn't seem to conform to current scientific thinking, but again, you know, neither did Galileo. At the same time, the U.S. government and other governments know that something's anomalous about the structure of the planet because, for instance, the U.S. Navy had something called the MOHO project, where they were going to attempt to drill through a thin part of the ocean's crust to reach the MOHO. And they gave up, and nobody really knows why. Some people think they might have made it, and some say they may have actually either released magma or some other dangerous substance, and so they backed off. But that's a very real undertaking of the U.S. government in decades past.
Many decades past. It happened while I was still a school kid.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, another thing that we were talking about, and talking about the structure of the Earth, I think it may have something to do with this. We talked about, you know, different types of creatures and where they may come from and what they may be, and I believe that a very large percentage of these things are flesh and blood creatures that are just, they're not normally in the view, the point of view where we can see them. They're not normally there. We can categorize them easily and so forth. But at the same time, I think that we have a whole other category that may have something to do with the structure of the Earth itself, and that would be creatures or entities, you know, which have an other dimensional or a paranormal nature. And these are things that, you know, apparitions and so forth, that people have seen, you know, and now with the modern age, much like television shows like Ghost Hunters, you know, they catch things on film and so forth, or in the infrared spectrum. And I really believe that this has something to do, and as I said back in 2000 in the initial book, you know, this has something to do with the electromagnetic field of the Earth. And if you go to my website, monomorphic.com, there's a new magazine there that Walter has put out called Phantom Stream. And I have an article in there about this very phenomenon. It ties in with the Morocco stuff we were talking about earlier. And it seems that there's a direct correlation between some type of anomalous beings and electromagnetism. And, you know, this begs the question, are we all, you know, if the Earth is a giant electromagnet, you know, regardless of the internal structure of the planet, if it's a huge electromagnet, I mean, it's you can almost envision it as a hard drive. And every conscious being, since every one of us has an electromagnetic field, our brains are electromagnetic generators. They generate a very powerful electromagnetic field. Are we all basically kind of like subroutines or software programs, in a sense, that run on this giant magnet? And if you think about it that way, and you read about the anomalies that have occurred, and the even from the ethereal to For instance, as John Keel pointed out, the coming and going of certain things along an electromagnetic spectrum as they shift in, within the, as they have the violet to red or red to violet shift as they go. Things of this nature indicate there's something going on that has to do with the electromagnetic field. And this may be the source of a lot of the paranormal activity and things that people have scoffed at or believed in, you know, wholeheartedly and been terrified of throughout human history. And by that I mean that the source of it may be the Earth itself. It may be that, that there are pockets within the Earth and within the field that are sort of out of phase with the rest of the electromagnetic field. And things that are in those environments come and go as they please, or come and go by accident, you know, into our end of the spectrum and then back to where they came from. And it would seem that, that wherever that back is, it may very well be inside the Earth.
Well, and it, you know, that very well could be because, I mean, I think all of us can understand, for instance, our eyes see in what is called the visible light spectrum. And it's called that because that's all our eyes will see.
Absolutely.
But we know from instrumentation that there is a great deal more to the light spectrum than what our eyes see. And there is, you mentioned, infrared. Our eyes don't see that. We have to have a mechanical device or an electronic optical device to enable us to see infrared. It translates infrared into a spectrum our eyes can recognize.
Right.
Ultraviolet is the same way. And one of the things that I always thought was cool was an ultraviolet spotlight. You can turn it on and no one can see it. But then you can put some special goggles on, and for you, that spotlight works just like a regular Q-beam spotlight. And it's lighting up the landscape, and, you know, no one else out there can see it, but with those goggles on, you can see the ultraviolet light illuminating what you've got it pointed at.
Well, the technology today, you know, I mean, I think that the technology is going to really lead to a revolution in understanding what's really going on, you know, on our planet, and has been all along.
Let's talk about shadow people, because that's a at times a big topic in paranormal and discussions, and at times it's not. It comes and goes, but
right.
Shadow people are simply shadows in the shape of a human, and you see them moving around. I mean, that's the way they're described. You see them moving around, or some people report them. So are you saying that those may actually be beings that are in another dimension that for some reason we're able to see at the moment?
I think that they may be close to our phase of reality, to whatever to where we are on the spectrum. And I guess there's some evidence that bears this out. You know, in other cultures and in previous cultures, they would have, you know, had no hesitation. The Muslim would have told you those were jinn. And, you know, the Irish and the Scottish people would have told you they were fairies and so forth. And some very devout Christians would have said they were demons. And those interpretations may be perfectly legitimate because that may be the terms that these things were known by, you know, by those cultures. At the same time, you have things like, I'll give you a perfect example. There's a television show, I'm sure most of your listeners have probably seen it. It's called Ghost Hunters. Now, I don't know those people, but I think they do a great job in general in what they're doing. But, you know, it's a matter of interpretation. And in one episode, they were in Ireland, and I was watching this thing because I think, you know, it's a pretty neat show. And they were using some infrared or ultraviolet mechanism to look across the top of a hill that was a so-called fairy hill, and they saw two or three of their guys walking across the hill. And their body heat signature was very, very distinct. You know, it was bright yellow going to orangish red in the middle. You know, the core temperature could be very brightly seen. And they're watching them cross the hilltop, and then these three or four little figures come into existence about maybe 70, 80, 100 yards behind them. But these are little humanoid figures, undeniably humanoid figures. but they're like 3 feet tall, 2 feet tall. And they're walking along, and their heat signature, including all the way to the core body heat signature, is identical to that of the so-called living human beings. Now, obviously there's a lot we don't know, but that tells me that whatever that was following them across the hilltop, most likely had a physical presence. You know, they thought they had captured spirits on film. Well, I watched these things that, you know, I watched the film many times. They come up almost out of the ground. They follow them across the field, and then they kind of fade down into the ground again. And you have to say, well, you know, fairies have a, Irish fairies or the Shee, they have a reputation for being subterranean dwellers. And they were there, they thought, to see paranormal activity, and they believed that that was paranormal activity. Well, what's paranormal? All that means is it's not normal. That's all it means. It doesn't mean that they're ghosts. You know, it doesn't mean that they're spirits. And
it's just something, you know, weird and out of the normal. All right, we are into another break, and we will continue with William Michael Mott when we come back. Don't go away, all right?
We are back, and my guest this evening is William Michael Mott.
You know, we were talking about that you were mentioning the Ghost Hunters episode, which, by the way, is one. That's one of the very few television shows that I have seen, and that I happen to see that episode. I don't get a chance to watch television.
Right.
So, in fact, folks don't understand. They don't know how much time is involved in this. As soon as this show is over, I go into post-production to get it ready to load up to replay again in 2 hours. And it post-production takes me almost an hour. And then there's email to do. So it's because I get a lot of email during the show. So my point is that I don't see a lot of television. I did see that episode that you're talking about, and it was fascinating.
It really was.
And it does look like they come up out of the ground.
It really does. And if you think about it, and I know those guys are really good at what they do. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But at the same time, there's a certain... It's just like the extraterrestrial hypothesis or anything else that someone's personal... It's their personal pet hypothesis. You know, those guys assume that these are spiritual entities. But spiritual entities don't walk, you know, for 100 yards across a field blazing with body heat.
Well, maybe they do.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean...
When they get back to the ruin in that episode, the Irish gentleman who was with them at the time, and I think he may be on the new Ghost Hunters International, but he was with them at the time, he sees a face. And he sees it behind one of the other guys, and this face flees from him. He chases it. He chases it. It leads him on a chase into the building. Now, you know, when I see that, I'm thinking, well, would an apparition, whether it's an intelligent haunting or whether it's a residual haunting, would it run away from people? Would it show up and say, uh-oh, you know, this guy saw me, I better run?
Okay, so what do you think these things were?
I think that they were just exactly what the Irish people have always said they were. They're some sort of other type of hominid or even physical being, whether they have the ability to move, as I said, from one of these electromagnetic pockets of another type of reality that's here on the planet, but it's here on the planet, whether they have that ability or not, and there may be some indication that they do, whatever they are, they're physically real. And in this case, they were anyway. And, you know, they showed themselves on the infrared, and then one of them made a point of fleeing and was pursued by somebody who was chasing it, just like you chase anybody. And that just, to me, that does not smack of a spirit or a haunting. That's more like an infestation of something or a population of something that's real, that's there, and that is part of that environment in terms of naturally occurring thing that lives there. And that's the way I interpreted that.
Sort of in the same vein as what we're discussing would be the phenomenal events that have taken place out at a place referred to as the Skinwalker Ranch. Right. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am, and I read Mr. Kelleher's book. I thought it was pretty good. And it did have some things that tie exactly into what I was saying in Caverns, Cauldrons, and Concealed Creatures. There's one point in the book where they're watching from a distance with some special binoculars, and they see something come out of the ground. They see this thing come out of the ground or go back into the ground. And, you know, they see something that's like a tunnel or like a doorway opening and then closing. And there's light inside. You know, and again, that leads us to the idea that there's something anomalous with the electromagnetic field of the planet. And there are beings out there who know how to manipulate that field. They know how to move from one part of the spectrum to another. And some of these beings may be spirits. Some of them may not. And I think that in the case of what goes on at the Skinwalker Ranch, from all indications, it seems like there's something going on there that's at least partially physical and may totally have its origin with some sort of physical being, but it's a being that has a technology and an understanding of the electromagnetic properties of our planet that we don't yet have, you know, that we're just now beginning to learn about.
So then you're suggesting that we are probably not the top of the top, the cream of the cream, and superior to everything else, but there may be sentient, intelligent beings on this planet in other, I'm going to use the term dimensions, although that is not strictly scientifically correct to use that term here. But it is a term that most people understand, so I'll use it. So here they are in another dimension, and they're able to shift into ours at will, and they do so by manipulating energy forces.
Right.
And that would make them then more intelligent than us.
More intelligent, maybe older. Maybe they've been around a lot longer than we have. And of course, you know, there's plenty of literature to support that. Whether you look at the biblical accounts, you know, of the fallen angels, or whether you look at the Hindu accounts of the various non-human races that preceded human beings on the planet, you know, they could be talking about the same thing. We may be talking about a technology and a civilization that, because it is so advanced, and because it has learned how to manipulate the electromagnetic spectrum, the field of the planet itself, that it's like Clark's maxim about magic. I mean, you know, where he said any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. You know, they reach a point in their quantum abilities to where their science becomes magic. To us, it would be magic, but to them, it's all the same thing.
Our own science. If we knew the true state and the true level of scientific development, which we do not, because we don't see it till it's already 40 years old.
That's what I've heard too, yeah. Okay.
But if we knew, for instance, if we were to wake up tomorrow and on the television they're saying, okay, folks, we're just going to go ahead and show you what we've got here. If they did that, we would swear every one of them was Chris Angel.
Yeah, or that they were aliens, or that they were, you know, whatever. But the fact is that
well, I don't know. Chris Angel may be.
But, you know, it's that old, you know, national security state mentality. I mean, we've reached the point where our economy and everything else is so closely tied to national security for every nation on Earth that there's a certain level of secrecy which is maintained no matter what. And, you know, I really believe that, you know, the things that I've seen about various people that have discovered alternative energy forms, and then these bad things happen to these people. And, you know, it's a shame, because had people not certain powers, wherever they may originate, and I'm talking about human beings here, had they not interfered with the natural development of knowledge and scientific progress, we wouldn't be in the jam we're in now.
So, when it comes to the people who, because we've all heard these stories, people who have developed some alternative form of generating energy, and then all of a sudden some weird accident happens and they're dead. So you're saying that for you it's not a great leap of faith to think that they were snuffed.
No, it doesn't. It's not a great leap of faith at all for me. But, you know, at the same time, you know, and this is something I told somebody on another radio show just a couple of days ago, and this was in regard to anomalous beings, the more advanced type we were just talking about. You know, the person, the interviewer asked me, said, well, what do you think they want? What is their plan? And, you know, I believe it's the same thing, is they have the same plan that anybody in power, whether they're human beings or not human beings, has, and that is the status quo.
Uh-huh.
You know, you don't rock the boat. You know, leave the people in power and in control in control. And if you start developing new systems and new ways of doing things, then you're a threat. And, you know, when I look at, for instance, politics, and I look at Democrats, Republicans, and I really see two sides of one coin. I mean, it's so very Machiavellian to me, you know, to see them setting up these straw horses for each other to knock down, you know. But behind the scenes, they're all together doing things that we really don't want them to do. And it's very, very shallow, and I wish people would wake up to what it really is all about.
Oh, well, that can only go on until people do wake up, and that is, of course, the greatest fear of all politicians in every country on the planet.
Absolutely.
Is that people will have their eyes open to reality. If that happens, once it happens, look what happened in Romania when the people's eyes were opened to reality about what their great leader was doing to them. They shot him themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very dangerous thing for people to wake up and smell the coffee. Very dangerous for people who have been trying to deceive them.
Well, that's what I believe. You know, I believe the exact same thing. I mean, intelligence is intelligence, you know, and I believe it's the same principle in play with anomalous beings.
All right, we have to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to open up the telephone line for you to call in with your questions and or comments for William Michael Mott, my guest this evening, as we talk about the paranormal. Welcome back. We're talking with William Michael Mott, and let me do a couple of things here very quickly. Let me put our telephone number on the screen for you, for those of you who are watching. The telephone number is 1-623-581-5148. Again, that is 1-623-581-5148.
And, William, we've got a caller online, so let's just go straight to the telephone.
Okay.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, hello. It's Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Hello, Kevin. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing all right. I just want to make a quick statement about how these beings are able to come to our dimension. I think it all has to do with the power of thought. And I think that these beings, I think instead of ridiculing the fact that the mind can go, instead of ridiculing the fact that the power of the mind can go further than the boundaries of the body, these people applied it and they taught it to their children how to use their mind to be able to manipulate things. And that's how these people have been able to travel interdimensional. I think if we started teaching our kids the same stuff that, you know, that people have been teaching with the remote viewing projects that the militaries have been doing, I think we'd be able to use the power of our minds to be able to manipulate things as well as these aliens have.
Well, let me ask a question now. Are you saying that you think that these beings are in another universe or dimension or however you wish to describe it? They're at a different energy phase. They're out of phase with us just a little bit, but they're able to be here because they're doing remote viewing?
Well, not that, but they're able to utilize the full power of their minds. So I've always said that the power of the human mind is much greater than they would like for people to believe. I think it's I'm trying to describe it in a certain way. I don't know if you
I understand. I think my guest also understands what
sure.
You're saying.
I guess my take on this would be that, you know, first of all, that may be a very real possibility, but I think we are dealing with minds that aren't precisely built like ours, and brains that aren't precisely built like ours. We're talking about something that's not, you know, descended from the same genetic heritage, maybe not completely, maybe partially. Somebody, you know, we have no idea what their physiological makeup in terms of their brain structure is. So they may have abilities we don't have. At the same time, there seem to be direct correlations between what are called window areas, you know, where strange things occur and strange animals and beings and creatures and even advanced technologies that are unknown are seen. And these are called window areas, and there are places around the world where, for instance, like the Skinwalker Ranch we talked about earlier, where strange things happen with great frequency. And I think that this might indicate that they know where those areas are that make it easier for them to move from whatever phase in the electromagnetic spectrum of the Earth, where they know how to move, you know, from where they are to where we are. But they have to use these window areas a lot of the time to do what they're going to do. They have to be positioned at the right place in the right time to make that transition to where we are.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Walter.
Hello, Walter.
From California, Walter Bosley.
Hey, Walter.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, man. How are you?
Good.
I now absolutely believe in the paranormal. We are listening to the voice of a ghost.
hey, Kevin, how are you? It's been a while.
It has been a while. I got your email, Walter. I got it today.
Oh, good.
Yep. Good to hear from you. What's on your mind?
Unfortunately, I missed a big chunk of the first part, but so I came up with a basic question, and that is, Mike, why do you think people have, in general, such a hard time accepting the concept? Let me reframe this. With so many people that are so willing to accept, you know, ghosts, they're so willing to accept Roswell aliens, they're so willing to accept what they're willing to accept. But when guys like you and Kevin and myself talk about these other entities and beings and people that share this huge celestial body with us, why do you think they have such a hard time accepting that possible reality?
Uh, Michael, you want to answer that question?
Well, here's the problem. I literally could only hear, like, snippets of what Walter
okay.
was saying. The call was dropping out constantly.
Yeah, and Walter, I don't know why, because your audio is usually very, very strong, but I had you cranked up to maximum, and we couldn't hear you.
Let me switch over to the phone right here. Is this better?
A little bit.
Yeah.
How's that?
That's better. Try it again.
Okay. I'll do this real quickly again. With so many people so willing to accept things like the Roswell alien and ghosts and these, the things that they are willing to embrace, why do you think, Mike, it's still so difficult for these very same people, in most cases, to accept the possibility that there's other hidden races, peoples, or beings actually physically sharing this planet with us?
Well, am I on here?
Yeah.
I think that, and I think, you know, Walter and I may have discussed this at different times, too. I think that it's just a matter of, again, you know, whether it's governments or unknown beings that actually are preying on our surface world for their own selfish reasons, or whether it's researchers in various fields. You know, status quo, man. You know, you don't want somebody stepping on your pet theories and showing other connections that may be more valid, that may play out better when you apply Occam's razor to the situation. I mean, they, for every hardcore this, you'll have an equally hardcore that who's going to argue and feel threatened in their position of authority and self-edification. And I think that's primarily the reason.
All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Lynn calling from Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay, this is Lynn calling from where?
Millie.
Okay.
From Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay, you had a question?
Yes. Do you want me to ask you now?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Let me
ask you to do something first. Reach over and turn off the volume on your computer or radio. We're hearing the show in delay back there.
Okay. I was just wanted to say that there are a lot of countries, a lot of people that accept these shadow people or jinn or whatever you want to call them, and they have respect for them. You know, like they live together with them, and like they're sharing, you know, a certain area with them. Like, for example, I lived for about 22 years in the Middle East in a little village, and they have very much respect for these jinn, if you want to call them. For example, like if we were like mopping the floors and we wanted to throw the water that was in the bucket out to the backyard or something, we will actually ask permission first. We will say, like, in the name of God, excuse me. And they believe that you say that and giving them a chance to step out of the way before you throw the water out, the dirty water out.
Right.
So they have, like, some kind of respect for them. They're sharing this area with them, you know, and they know that.
Lynn, let me ask you a question. Have you personally ever seen any of these jinn?
No, I have other experiences which doesn't have to do with this show.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had other experiences. In the Middle East, they will probably say, "Oh, you saw jinn," but no, I know I didn't. I know I saw Gray. But you know, they do have respect for them, and they don't
right.
want them to make them angry and let them come out or anything like that. So they just respect their space. You know,
I
respect yours.
Can I make a point with you here on this?
Yes.
You know, it's very interesting. It's the same perspective that the Irish peasantry had when it came to the people they called the good neighbors, and all kinds of great euphemisms about how wonderful they were and real flattering terminology, but they lived in terror of these beings. And they behaved in the same way. You know, you can call it respect, but it's respect born of fear. And it's a respect born of terror. And I believe there are ways that people have already found to rid themselves of having to live in terror of things that go bump in the night. And I think it's a major advancement in human progress not to have that type of fear. And, you know, I understand that it's nice to be respectful,
but I tend to be respectful of other human beings or who are respectful of me. And if there's something around that's not respectful of me, then I'll be damned if I'm going to give it respect. And that's just, you know, maybe that's my Western point of view, but that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, they have fear of them because there are tales, I don't know if they're true or not, but there are tales that people have thrown like dirty water out and this jinn has come and took possession of this body. And they have asked them, why are you took possession of this body? And they would say, because they wet my children and they threw dirty water at them.
Well, you know, that's what you call any old excuse, you know? I mean, whether they really wet anything or anybody or not, you know, if they give in to the premise that every move they make in life is going to offend some unknown agency that's going to retaliate in some unknown terrible way, then, you know, what kind of a way is that to go through life? I mean, you have to step up and say, you know, to hell with it, I'm not going to take it, you know, and whether it's something of this nature, whether it's terrorism, you just don't take it, you know, you can't capitulate. And, you know, by the same token, I understand it's a cultural thing, but, you know, either you want to advance in your ability to think freely and to do things that you want to do in your life, or you want to give a certain amount of control over to unknown forces. And I just, to me, I think that's just not the way to go. Now, I mean, I understand that they do have that respect and everything, but when it's respect born of fear, I'm hoping, you know, that people will get over that.
Lynn, I want to ask you a question, two questions. Are you a first-time caller?
No, I called the other night also.
Okay. Secondly,
you didn't get
your applause?
No, I didn't.
Well, let's give you some applause here.
Thank you.
All right. Now, tell me again where you said you're calling from?
Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
Now, are you listening to us over a radio station, or are you listening to us on your computer?
No, I'm online on the computer.
Okay. All right. I do appreciate the call, Lynn. It's very fascinating. Where did you live in the Middle East?
It's a little village. It's called Turmukaya. It's a very tiny village there.
In what country?
In Israel.
In Israel.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you. I love your show. I love it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. You're very sweet to say so. Thank you. All right. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 1-623-581-5148. And if you have a question or a comment, we would love to hear from you. All right. Yes. I'm sorry, Michael?
Can I have a question.
Yeah.
Can I let people know how they can download this free magazine I've been telling them about?
Absolutely.
Sure. It's at motimorphic.com. That's MOTTIMORPHIC, motimorphic.com. And there are a number of free downloads there, and one of them is a new magazine called Phantom Stream that Walter and some of his friends have come up with. And I guess I'll be writing a column for that on a regular basis, along with Brad Steiger and Greg Bishop and a number of other very excellent researchers. And I'm really looking forward to getting this one going. So that for a limited time, there's a free download there if people want to go check it out.
All right. And the shortcut to that is, if you can't remember it, just look next to William Michael Mott's photograph on my website. And right next to it is a link to motimorphic.com. So you can just click that link.
Thanks. And also, Walter, who called earlier, Walter is sort of a dynamo in terms of publishing, and he and I had some common interests, which was really funny. We both are Fortean and paranormal researchers and aficionados, but we're also pulp fiction aficionados and writers. And so he's come up with something called Lost Continent Library and a new magazine, Lost Continent Library Magazine. So in addition to my fiction and nonfiction work that's at the site, there's a lot of these magazines with a lot of pulp fiction that he and I and other people have written. and illustrated and things of that nature. So hopefully it's a lot of fun for readers. There's a lot of free stuff there to read, and there are links to real books that you can hold in your hands and things of that nature.
All right. Let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Debbie from Columbus.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. Interesting show tonight. Hi, Michael.
I just hey, how are you doing?
Say, pretty good. I just wanted to say that Lynn has the truth of it right. There's a lot of cultures that do honor spirits and other entities that just a few of us know about. And a lot of it, and you are right, a lot of it is based on fear. But I think if you get past the fear and, you know, just try to get to know them as, you know, humans know humans and communicate with them
mm-hmm.
without that fear-based understanding or that fear-based feeling, things are really not as bad or dark as they seem. I kind of had an encounter with a shadow being, I started back in roughly the early 80s on my psychic abilities and everything like that after my second UFO contact. And just one night when I was downstairs in the old house that I grew up in Portland, Maine, I saw this shadow on the wall. And I knew immediately what it was. And there's different types of shadow beings. You have the ones that you can pretty much sense if your psychic abilities are strong enough, which ones don't mean you harm and which ones might be, I wouldn't really say really harmful, but might have some kind of a mischief intent. And this one definitely had kind of a negative miasma about it. And basically I just told it, look, you know, I know what you are. I don't know why you're here, but could you please leave and don't bother me anymore? And
did it leave?
It did leave, yes. So I think if you approach it with, as Michael said, with the intent of not being fear-based, and you respect it, but at the same time, you know, you pretty much tell it, look, this is my space, this is where I live at, unless, you know, you're going to be communicating with me in a normal and positive manner, I really don't want to have much to do with you, because I have worked with spirits.
Well, now let me ask you this about mm-hmm. this particular shadow being.
Mm-hmm.
You said it had a sort of a negative and a little bit of a sinister feeling about it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that feeling was coming from that being, or is it your own psychological response to that being?
This is what I was getting from looking at it, and it wasn't based on like any primal fear or primal instincts that are inherent in all of humankind. This is something that I was picking up with my third eye, with my psychic ability.
Hmm.
And,
Debbie, let me ask you something about this.
Yes.
Did you, since you know about these types of matters, you know what an incubus is, right?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you think that this thing may have had those types of intentions?
It's possible, but at the time I wasn't really getting that. I was just getting that it was basically a shadow being, and that it was mm-hmm. from, you know, a dimension in the fort. Well, actually, from a little pocket in fourth dimension, that it will sometimes cross in our third dimension, and those of us that are, you know, open to these types of things can see them.
Mm-hmm.
And are aware.
If you read my book, there's a chapter in there about that talks about. There's a couple that talk about the entities of this nature, and it's in the second edition. And the people that have had experiences with these things, and you know, a lot of times what starts out as a benign tolerance of beings of this nature, which are really, if you think about it, they're intrusive. And mm-hmm. when they're tolerated, many times it grows into something that becomes intolerable for some of the experiencers. And I just
right.
want to make sure that
and
you know that there's always that aspect of it. I mean,
I've actually encountered maybe one or two since then. And basically, if, like I said, out of maybe the three of them, two of them, you know, weren't of good intent. The other one was, you know, I just basically communicated with it because I didn't receive any kind of a negative feeling from it.
Right. Right. And for instance,
I'm sorry.
For instance, the whole idea of things like the Ouija board. I've just seen so many instances.
I don't deal with Ouija boards.
Right, and you know why? Because
yes.
When people deal with those things, you know, it may say, "Well, I'm a little girl spirit or whatever," just
right.
to engage people in conversation. And what starts out seeming like some innocent game becomes very dangerous and very frightening for a lot of
these
people.
Does.
It turns from something seemingly benevolent into something that just wants. The more attention it gets, and the more fear it can generate,
mm-hmm.
the more intense and more aggressive it becomes.
Oh,
it does. I just think that you have to be really careful dealing with things, because it's kind of like, would you believe, if you're walking down the street and a complete stranger dressed in a three-piece suit walks up to you and starts, you know, talking a bunch of junk to you, I mean, are you just going to believe him? You don't know who he is.
Well,
you know,
exactly.
If you wouldn't believe another human being, you know, you got to be really leery of things that aren't exactly, you know, like we are.
Right.
That's what I've seen over, after talking to so many people, you know, so many people who've had these experiences. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Right. I've been very fortunate, though, in my dealings with spirits on the other side that most of them are, you know, are benign and benevolent. And both my UFO contacts when I was about 4 or 5 years of age and also in my teens, I've been very lucky to be able to contact entities that were, you know, very, very benevolent. So I've
mm-hmm.
been very lucky with that. But I've also been fortunate to train with several Lakota elders. So when I do, like, journeying and some of my shamanic work, I know what to look for and what not to look for.
Right.
I know what my guides are like. You know, I've just been very blessed.
But there is a lot of
danger out there, and a lot of people are not
right.
aware of that.
There really is. When you recall what you say were your UFO experiences, do
mm-hmm.
you see any similarities between those experiences and your shamanic experiences?
Oh boy. Yes and no. Some were
okay.
the same, and some are different. Because
right.
To travel in the spirit world, and
uh-huh.
I'm just a beginning shamanic practitioner,
uh-huh.
many of the elders that I've worked with have been doing this all their lives, and you just have to really be careful, and everything is done by ritual.
Right.
And for the idea of protection, for the sense of
right.
protection.
Absolutely. What did the UFO encounters, did they want something from you?
The thing is, to make a long story short, the first time, I mean, I know I'm not from here. I've actually been
uh-huh.
very fortunate, and Kevin knows this. It's on the website for listeners' stories. I was actually very fortunate to travel back. I also do past life regression coaching as well as energy healing. To be able to regress back to the time when I first came here to the Earth Mother about 35,000 years ago. So I'm an old soul, and I've been, you know, here all that time, not only learning and trying to get back to my home world of Galena, but also in this lifetime trying to prepare not only myself, but others, my clients and family and friends and other people I come in contact with for the enlightenment, for the changing times that are coming up, which are
okay.
happening actually right now. And
well,
you know, 2012 is just a little bit of it.
Right. Well, I'll tell you my perspective, and again, I do talk about even in the original 2000 version, I think I was one of the first writers to kind of tie 2012 into some of this stuff or what supposedly is going to happen or whether it happens or not. You know, it's got this aura about it. You know, people think something either horrific or something tremendous is going to happen. But you know, I have to be careful because, for me, when I look at this stuff, like, first, when I hear you, I know that you're sincere and you believe everything that you just told me. And I do not doubt that those experiences are real for you. But I have to look at things objectively. Even myself, when I've had strange experiences, I have to try to be as objective as I can. You know what I'm saying? Because I believe that we live in a time, and reality is such that it's very easy for us to perceive what we want to perceive or perceive what somebody else wants us to perceive. And that goes for whether it's humans dealing with humans or non-humans dealing with humans.
And so, I mean, I respect what you say about past life regression and all the rest of it, but at the same time, you know, when it comes to things that don't have the pattern, the motif where I can look and say, this correlates to that, and this correlates to that, and look, here it is, then I kind of can't really make a judgment as to whether or not it's valid or not. I mean, from my perspective.
All right, Debbie, I want to thank you for the call. We are racing towards a break here in just a moment. And I want to say to our guest, not only was Walter a ghost, Debbie's a ghost. She hasn't called in a long time, so we're delighted to have her call in.
Well, I would have liked to talk to her more about some of her experiences because they sound very similar to many of the ones that people told me about after the first edition of the book came out. And you know, it sounds like there's a lot more that she's experienced in terms of actual interaction.
Well, let me just suggest then that she go to your website and from there get in touch with you.
That sounds good. And you know, if she wants to, you know, you can give her my email address and if you want to, and she can let me know, you know,
all right,
what her stories are.
We are into a break, and so we're going to have to cut our mics off before it does.
If you have a question or a comment, right after this break, we'll take some more calls. Welcome back. My guest this evening is William Michael Mott. And we're talking about all kinds of weird, strange things for some people. Some people call them paranormal. And we do this type of thing every night here at the Kevin Smith Show.
Let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Walter again.
Okay, Walter.
Yeah, I got my phone situation. I, you know, listening to the last couple of callers that brought to mind, I thought I'd ask Mike, you know, his opinion of, you know, with both of you. I've talked both on the air and off to different degrees, but Mike, in the last, especially the last, I want to say a little over a year, actually in the last 2.5, going on 3 years, but specifically the last year has been intense. I've had some extraordinary experiences with, quite frankly, involving, I believe, disembodied spirits, entities, such. And it seems to have coincided with my discovery that I'm a pretty talented remote viewer. But with that has come also some pretty, you know, strong things in the last year of my life. Of course, my father died. My mother was in a very strange one-person single-car accident in February of this year. That I discussed some interesting, strange things about that.
Walter, I'm going to have to ask you to talk directly into your phone and speak way up, because I've got you cranked as high as I can. We can barely hear you.
Okay, well, basically, not to go, I realized I was droning. I just had an extraordinarily strange year that has involved, you know, entities and strange experiences and remote viewing and things like that. And Mike, in your opinion, from your research, what would you say about that if I were just, you know, I'm just me asking, what do you think this is?
Well, I tell you, man, if you look at John Keel's work or any number of other people, and I've seen it myself, there's a certain synchronicity, strange coincidences that occur when you start researching these types of topics. And there's no denying it. I mean, just a few weeks ago, I went on a trip with my family. I went to watch my son graduate from Airborne and got his wings and everything. And you know, on the whole way over there, I would say something, and literally within 30 seconds, we would see a billboard that had whatever it was I said on there. We would see a bumper sticker that had exact same words. I mean, it was weird. I mean, it was beyond weird. I had five people in the vehicle with me, and everybody saw it. It happened all the way over to the base, all the way back, you know. It was just really weird. And you reach a point where you see these things happen, and you have to say there's a pattern, you know. There's something underlying all this stuff, and sometimes intelligence is involved, apparently. And it's one of those things that makes you say, maybe it all is a big electromagnet, and we're all plugged in somehow. And, you know, if we could just figure out how to harness that field ourselves and control it, then we'd all be ahead of the game a little bit.
Do you think that it is either you've opened yourself up to a bigger awareness, or do you think you've appeared on the radar scope, so to speak, of this other part of the spectrum of reality?
I believe it's more the latter. I mean, I know that the caller earlier was talking about your own brain development and everything, and that's fine, but you know, there's just so many, there are so many accounts of people who seem to draw the attention of something. And, you know, sometimes it's something good and sometimes it's something that is not good at all. And, you know, when that happens, you see these types of coincidences, these types of just really weird synchronicities. And sometimes it becomes so numerous that it's almost a joke.
Yeah.
And when that happens, you know that something that's not normal is going on.
Yeah, not normal. I could say not normal is right.
Yeah, that yeah. And by the way, Walter's new magazine, this Phantom Stream, I think it's really going to be great. And I hope that all you listeners do check it out, because, you know, I'm really proud to be in the company of Walter and Brad Steiger and any number of other really, really great researchers and writers. And Walter's been real forceful in seeing that this stuff comes to pass.
Well, thanks for those good words. My thing is, I just want to make sure that magazine
covers things that haven't been covered. There's a niche out there that really, you know, John Keel did it right. Jacques Vallée got into it right. You've been doing it right. There's some other writers out there. I want to drag Kevin in on this thing so that his stuff can get out there to that same audience. But, yeah, that's what that's all about. But
yeah, and I think that's important because, you know, like I was talking about earlier, you have so many of these. Everybody's got their little fort, their little empire of theories that they hold up in their little fort, their little world, and anything new that comes along or any new interpretation of it, they become very combative. And it's important, I think, that some of us start thinking outside of all these old paradigms and start looking at these things in some new ways. And another guy that's looking at it in a new way is a guy named Mac Tunnies. I believe that's how you say his name. And Mac has a very similar theory to mine about what he calls crypto-terrestrials. And, you know, it's important that people start asking these questions. And you know, when the old theories don't answer a lot of these questions, then obviously there's something missing, and it's time to take a new look at what's going on.
Well, absolutely right. I agree with you. And I'm not going to take up too much more of the time, give some more space for other callers. I just want to say before I go that, you know, someone else was talking about, you know, respecting these entities and things like that. And I just want to remind everybody, I'm not saying to do anything stupid, but I always keep in mind that big climactic scene from The Exorcist where Father Damien finally gets fed up with this BS that this demon's doing and basically slaps the hell out of him, the hell out of a girl until the demon leaves and fortunately goes in him and he pulls a Jesus parable and sends the pigs over the cliff. But just keep that in mind that, you know, we have value too, and all these entities we encounter, they don't necessarily mean us well, and they're not necessarily more powerful than we are.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's amazing how a lot of it seems to be based on how much attention, you know, they can milk from whoever they're aggravating at the time. I mean, the more attention they can get and the more fear a lot of times they can generate, then the more active they become. And I think that should tell us something. And that may have something to do with electromagnetism again, since the human brain physically generates a much more intense field when it's terrified. And so, you know, there's something else going on here, and I think that people need to be a little bit smarter, a little bit more careful when dealing with things that they can't see concretely, you know, sitting at the table beside them, you know.
All right, Walter, I want to thank you for the call. Very interesting points you bring up and some very interesting questions. We have a question that has come in from one of our listeners in the U.K., and it says many prebiotic molecules have been discovered by astronomers. Amino acids, the precursors of peptides and proteins, have been found in meteorites. Mm-hmm. Complex sugar molecules, the backbone of DNA, have been discovered in the spectra of various interstellar clouds. Is it not possible that ETs will be very similar to us because they are made of the same complex organic molecules that are widespread in both the solar system and interstellar space? And
yep.
That's from Sue.
Okay, that's a really good question, and that's very similar to what we talked about earlier. I think that it's completely possible that there are bipedal life forms that are similar to us in the universe, but I think it's just as likely and more likely that the majority of life forms out there are just, you know, the variety would be staggering. It would, you know, given the variety of life, you know, everything from jellyfish, which are, you know, simple organisms, but look at how complex they really are. Everything from something like that to, you know, a human being or an elephant, you know.
Well, yeah.
Here on this planet,
and
you have so much.
We hear a lot of diversity in descriptions of ETs as well.
Exactly. But the problem with that is there are a number of problems with the theory about them all being ETs. And, you know, I'm not saying that maybe there can't be an ET, including something that someone has seen that might be an ET. But the problem is that in terms of geologic time, in the lifetime of the planet, okay, in the last 150 years, the variety of bipedal beings of a wide range until just very recently when the grays became supposedly the most common whatever, but the wide range of bipedal, more or less humanoid beings that have been seen, what's the likelihood of hundreds of these types of beings all converging on this one planet in the this remote.
Well, I don't think anybody has suggested that they all are.
You know, right. So I think that the preponderance of the evidence, Occam's razor would say, you know, the simplest answer, no matter how preposterous it might seem at the onset, the simplest answer is generally going to be the correct answer. And the simplest answer is whatever they are, most of them, if not all of them, most of them are from here.
All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, Kevin. This is Steve. I'm calling from Fort Worth, Texas.
Hello, Steve. Have you called before?
Yes.
Okay.
I had a question for William. I've always been curious that on a lot of observations for the Grays, the ET beings, they have big almond-shaped eyes. I've
right.
been curious that, you know, most of the Earth-like creatures that have large eyes are nocturnal.
Exactly.
And I always associated them with, like, living underground or in dark spaces.
Exactly right.
And I've often thought that, like, on Mars, you know, now that they're finding information that they think that all the water has left the surface of Mars and has gone underground, to whereas, you know, I have a theory, my own personal theory, is that there may be a life under the crust.
Right.
Mars, and there also may be Martians, let's say, perhaps in the inner Earth, you know, that would be in the inner Earth living, but you see a lot of...
Okay, Steve, do you want to hold on during the break, or do you want us to just answer that after the break?
Well, you can just answer it.
All right, thank you so much. We are into a break, and we will be back with William Michael Mott on The Kevin Smith Show right after this. better when you turn the microphone on. You know that? All right. We are back. And we're talking with William Michael Mott. If you have a question or a comment, we would love to hear from you. We have a little bit of time left between now and the end of the show. We'll take another call or two. And, you know, one of the things that I think about when we have these discussions is that, you know, we used to hear all kinds of stories as children about, I use the term mythical beings, and you've mentioned some of them, like unicorns. And, you know, I wonder, did they actually exist, or is this an allegory? I mean, did these creatures actually exist?
Well, I think, you know, that you have, there's a basis of truth for everything, but again, you know, recently there was a deer born somewhere that had one horn growing out of the center of its head. That was just in the last couple of months. You know, how do we know what a unicorn was? I mean, you have people that were picking up narwhal horns and coming back and during medieval times say, look, this is a unicorn horn. And they may have known darn well that it was from something in the ocean. So, you know, we have all these things that get mixed up and influence one another and so forth. You have the rhinoceros and everything else. But at the same time, you know, if there are animals out there that have horns and there is a mutation and something has one horn, then it might be seen as something, you know, very unusual, very special by a primitive population and so forth. But should I answer that last caller's question?
Yeah, I want to get to that. What about those almond eyes?
Well, you know, that's something that I do examine at length, and there are so many things about so-called grays in the literature that indicate to me that these are beings that are from Earth, and there are some very good reasons for that. One of the main reasons that we can say that is because anything that supposedly is a spacefaring race, and by that I mean something that's maybe been in interstellar space for millions of years or hundreds of thousands of years, their eyes are not going to be really large. And the reason for that is because space is a very bright place.
I thought space was a very dark place.
No. Space is maybe dark when you're on the night side of the Earth looking up, but space, when you're in space, I mean, that's why the inside of the astronaut helmet is coated with, in between the layers of glass or high impact, whatever that is, they've got a thin layer of gold. And the reason that they have that is because gold is the only element that you can put in a super thin layer that's transparent that will only let in visible light. If it weren't for that
well,
gold
yeah,
layer,
but in order for there to be visible light, there has to be atmosphere.
Right.
In space, there's no atmosphere, and unless you turn and look directly at the sun, you don't see the light of the sun.
I guess my point is this, though. They can see in space. When they're out spacewalking, they can see the space shuttle. There's no atmosphere, but they can see it. So there's light without atmosphere, but it's a very bright place, and it's dangerously bright. And, you know, the thing is that if you have a being, supposed race of beings that has been, you know, traveling around interstellar space for quite some time, most likely they're not going to be, genetically, they're not going to be predispositioned to have really large eyes. Secondarily, like the caller said, that's usually indication of a nocturnal animal. And of course, you know, these things tend to come around at night and do whatever they're going to do, and then they leave. Well, you know, there have been some accounts of them pulling this film off of their eye, and it's more like a contact lens, and there's like a reptilian eye underneath, or a bird-like eye underneath. Again, their skin has been described as being reptilian-like or bird-like. The movements, the way they move, they have been described as shuffling, but shuffling side to side, moving with very small steps and just kind of sliding around in that fashion. And again, that's the movement of something that lives kind of in a very tight environment, something that's used to moving around in a tunnel or in tunnels and warrens and things of that nature. And there are just so many things that I go into in my book that indicate, you know, that there's more likelihood these things are subterrestrial or subterranean in origin than that they come from far away. Another thing that indicates this is this almost, they almost fall over themselves to tell people where they come from. And it's always, oh, look, we come from up there. Look, no, we don't come from here. We come from up there. We come from Zeta Reticuli. We come from the Crab Nebula. Yeah, and they, you know, it's like a classic bait and switch. It's you know, look up there. That's where we're from. We're not from here. We're not from over here behind you. We're from out there. And, you know, like I said before, if you're not going to believe a complete stranger who's a human being when he tells you some hogwash or you don't know who he is, why in the world would you believe a predatory being that comes at night, takes what they want without permission, without local anesthetic? Now, if they're telepathic, obviously they have to know that it hurts. And, you know, why, is that how they get their jollies? I mean, you know, what's that all about? There's a little bit of sadism involved in this whole process. So I guess
it may be related to they don't look at us as being as high as we think we are. Much in the same way as when we go out and capture dolphins and tag them.
Right, but at the same time,
we don't give them any local anesthesia.
Yeah, that's true. But at the same
time, if I was a dolphin, I'd be highly ticked at humans.
But if these beings are as advanced as they supposedly are, and by the way, they're advanced in some ways, but in some other ways they don't seem so advanced. But if they're as advanced as they say they are, or as they like to put forward that they are, you would think that they would know that it would be a lot easier to deal with a human being if you would come into the room when the human being was asleep and give them how about a little chloroform? They won't wake up, take what you need, and then leave. You know, instead, it's let's go through a big drama. Let's make a big drama out of everything. Let's show that we're actually, you know, going to came from somewhere else to do this. And
well, how would you account for people actually seeing themselves on a craft, a spaceship, and actually seeing themselves on that spaceship leaving the Earth?
Right. I'll tell you exactly how, and this ties into the gentleman's question. You know, I think what we're dealing with here, and this is something I go into also in my various books and such, we're dealing with a civilization that's old. And if it's a terrestrial civilization that evolved here, you know, 100,000 years ago, you know, 500,000 years ago, 50,000 years ago, they reached a point where we're at now where our knowledge becomes exponential, and it doubles every, you know, every 6 months, and then sooner or later it doubles every 3 months, and then it doubles every 1 month. And, you know, finally you just reach a point where it's so rapid it takes on a life of its own. If they reached that point quite some time ago, then they probably colonized the solar system already. They've probably been out there. They've been to Mars. They've been to the various moons of the gas giants, where very anomalous things have been seen by some of our space probes that really don't have a real rational explanation in terms of natural formations. They've been out to these other bodies in the solar system, but since the Earth is the center of genetic diversity in the solar system, and it is the original home planet, it is the garden, as so many ancient scriptures tell us. You know, it's the place to be. It's where all the action is. So they come back home. And maybe they've done whatever they need to do out there for the most part. And if they need to go out and see what we're doing when we're tinkering around on the moon or whatever we're doing, then, yeah, they'll go out there and we'll see them watching us. You know, they're watching to see what the kids are doing. But at the same time, you know, kids never like it when big brothers and sisters or bullies, you know, look down at them and do things they really shouldn't be doing. And so I think that humanity kind of needs to figure out that maybe this whole benevolent space brother, ETs who are advanced and going to save us from ourselves, this whole myth is just that. It's a myth, and there's a lot of misdirection, a lot of subterfuge going on, and it's time to start looking at this a little more critically instead of with wishful thinking and so forth, because it's very dangerous not to be a little more critical in terms of the way we look at these beings, whatever they are.
All right. Let me get you to give your web address again, because we are just a few seconds from having to close the show.
Okay. It's www.motimorphic.com. That's MOTTIMORPHIC.com. And there's lots of nonfiction, infiction there, links to printed material, and some free downloads. So hopefully people will get a chance to check it out and enjoy it.
All right. I want to thank you for being with us this evening. It's been fascinating, as always.
Well, thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate it, and I always enjoy talking to you.
All right. If you will, stay on the line with me for just a moment.
Folks, don't forget, if you got a few extra bucks where you can help us, we need it. Now, I always get email where people get upset because I say that. And they say, you know, you're always asking for money. Well, you're always listening, aren't you? And the bills go on. All right. If you can, click that donate button. All right. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow, so long, everybody.